It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me in the studio. And Andy Daynard is back on the phone with me today. Andy is the editor and publisher of a website called realityblurred.com. Andy spends way too much of his time watching reality shows on television. Some great ones, some not so great ones, and the vast majority that fall somewhere in the middle. And I haven't had him on for several months, and so because Ian and I are both big fans of Survivor and The Amazing Race, which are having interesting seasons, I've invited Andy to join us here today to talk a little bit. Hi, Andy. How are you?
Excellent, Paul. How are you doing?
Good. Let's start with Survivor, which is still getting good ratings for CBS on Wednesday nights, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Doing very well, beating even American Idol, which is, you know, itself diminished compared to its former glory. But yeah, I think it's just remained a creatively strong show, even though it's in its 30th season and we're coming up on the 15th year anniversary of its debut.
So how does it make you feel considering that you wrote an obit for Survivor 2 years ago?
Well, you know, I was obviously very mad and passionate when I wrote that. It was that episode where Brandon Hance has a meltdown and then Jeff Probst sort of pretends to, like, let him get voted out as they sort of kick him off the show because he's become a huge problem. And,
Let me just explain for people who don't know, Brandon Hance was the nephew of a guy by the name of Russell Hance who dominated the show and the couple of seasons that he was on. He dominated it so much that he was invited back later.
One of the top villains ever.
But dominated it in an evil way, if you will. He was a great game player, but horrible at the social game and had no chance of actually winning the thing, but was such a compelling television personality that the Survivor producers then said, who else in the Hance family can we get? And unfortunately, they ended up with this, you know, almost psychotic nephew of his who had major mental health issues and yet was allowed to go on the show once or twice?
Twice. That was the real problem. Like, after the first time, it should have just been, we don't invite him back. But they invited him back because they knew he would draw ratings. And just from the very beginning, and in fact, even before the game started, journalists who were on location reported that he was just behaving erratically and scarily and freaking people out. And so it should have been really clear to everybody that this was a bad idea. And for me, it was an occasion to look at the fact that Jeff Probst, who is our beloved host of the show, he's taken over the series and runs it now as its executive producer and has for the last few years. And the direction he's taken it in is one that isn't always the one I would have chosen, and I'm not sure he's as good a producer as he is as good of a host.
I read your summaries of the show each week, and I almost always concur with them, but it does seem like you've got a thing for Probst, and particularly the way, as executive producer, he said, you know what Survivor needs? More of me!
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just because, I think one of the reasons why I keep hammering on it, and it's probably to a degree of obnoxiousness that's even more obnoxious than Probst himself, that I hammer at him, but it's because I know what a great host he is. And when he's a host and producer, you can see the producer wheels turning in his brain, and so that's turned him into someone who yells nonstop during the challenges just to try to, like, goad people. And during Tribal Council, he basically, like, lays out the narrative and story that he wants and basically suggests things to the contestants in a way that he never used to, and that's just not the Jeff Probst that I grew up on Survivor loving, and I want the old one back, although maybe I should just give up because that's futile at this point.
Yeah, and Survivor has always been about how do these people interact. And I'm curious what you think of this season where they have three tribes where half a dozen people were white-collar workers, half a dozen people were blue-collar workers, and a half a dozen people were what they called no-collar workers, surfers and entrepreneurs who didn't have to answer to anybody in the course of their day. What do you think of that three-tribe setup and the social game that they're playing?
It's interesting because I think right now there's been a lot of one great thing about the season is we've had a lot of character development, and a lot of the characters have proven to be just terrible at the social game, regardless of the tribe they're on. So although we have these divisions, like you mentioned, they all seem to have significant problems. Yeah, the blue-collar ones are a little more physically aggressive with each other, and the no-collar ones are a little bit more like who cares? Like, let's just go off and
surf
in the waves naked. So that's interesting. By the way, the Divisions is interesting to think about the fact that they'd cast this entire season with all these people, and then literally on Jeff Probst's kitchen table, he was shuffling faces around, and he decided that he would divide the tribes based on these arbitrary distinctions. So really, the categorizations are Jeff's versus their own personality. So it's interesting to watch as it goes, if this person actually belongs in this sort of stereotypical group that they have ended up in.
Which brings us to one woman who's on the show by the name of Nina, who is deaf, not deaf from birth, but she became deaf as an adult. And I think it was probably in her mid-60s when she went off to do this show, and she wears hearing aids, implants that make it possible for her to hear, but she still has difficulty hearing, particularly in groups. Why do they put people like that on the show? I understand that they want to say to the disabled community, look, we want to include you as well. But essentially, aren't they putting somebody on there who has a target on their back from day one?
I think that's a fair point, although I argued that a lot of other characteristics make people targets too. I think, to be perfectly honest, her age is actually probably her biggest flaw, and her sex, if only because there's sort of an inherent sexist assumption in Survivor that the women are always going to be weaker. Although in the last few years that's kind of gone away, and we've seen some really strong women, and also seen tribes kind of ignore strong men and vote them off and as if they don't really need them around. I think that she was capable of being on the show, and I don't think that there was anything that, her hearing really didn't prevent her from doing anything. The real problem with Nina was her personality, and she felt excluded, and then instead of dealing with that in a way that would sort of enhance her reputation with everyone, she did it in the most petulant middle schooler way possible, which just gave them a reason to alienate her and ultimately vote her off.
You never include me. You never nice to me. That sort of thing. Which brings up one of the interesting things about the 15-year-long social game that is Survivor, which is you have people on the game who are obviously weak players. And if I were on that game, and by the way, I never will be, because you're not going to catch me. You're not going to catch me outside for 24 hours, let alone 39 days. But if I were there, I'd be thinking, I want to help advance the weaker players in this game, particularly if I can manipulate them along the way to be on my side and be loyal to me all the way through this. Carrying them through the game means once we get to the end, I can absolutely win this thing if they're in the same group that I am.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be a brilliant strategy. So maybe you should start staying outside a little longer and then eventually apply for the show.
No, that's not going to happen.
I think there is something interesting there, though, too, about especially at the beginning of the show, and since we have three tribes now, we have like multiple, it's really, really early in the game for all of them. You tend to have somebody who stands out, and then when you go to tribal council for the first time, the tribe wants to make the easiest choice possible. And so if you're someone who thinks, like, let's keep this person around because, I could beat them eventually, and your whole tribe is saying, like, that person is the obvious target, you probably don't want to stand up for them at that point.
You just want
to go along with the pack.
You do not want to stand up for anything or for any reason at the beginning because, again, you're painting a target on yourself. You want to be one of those people who just goes along to get along until you can get to the merge, and by then you've developed some sort of alliances, and you can use that alliance to manipulate your way through the rest of the game. But being the standout person, the loud, obnoxious mailman in the blue-collar tribe, or Nina, or any of these other people who insist on, well, I'm the leader, I can take charge of this, I'm going to make everybody at the camp work, because I have a work ethic that means we have to do that. Why would you want to get in there and annoy people? It's ridiculous.
It is, and yet we see that every season, and it's just like, I think when you're hungry and tired and sleeping outside, or just in general, I think some people's personalities and or their humanity they can't hold it back. They have to be that way even if it hurts them.
Now, I don't want this whole segment to be about Survivor, Andy. But I do have one last question for you, and that is that a lot of people don't know that there are Survivor broadcasts around the world. You know, there's the American survivor, but there are several European nations and all sorts of countries. They have their own survivor with their own people, and they go off and shoot it. And I saw you mention a couple of weeks ago that the American version of Survivor is going to be going in a future season to a place where I think it was the French survivor went and ran into problems. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. So, yeah, the next two seasons of Survivor 31 and 32, it looks like we'll be filming in Cambodia starting later this month, actually. And it's a new location for the show, which is nice, but they're actually using an island in Cambodia off the coast that was where the French survivor shot. And I think it was 2 years ago, perhaps three, the French survivor, during the first challenge, someone collapsed and died. Oh. And they canceled the season, and then a couple weeks later, the physician on the show who was on location committed suicide on that very island because of the press surrounding that death. So it's actually, interestingly enough, the same production company that was producing a show in South America earlier this week where a helicopter crashed, or two helicopters crashed into each other, killing several contestants who were who were French athletes and Olympians. But, you know, again, I don't know if it's so much Survivor as this production company or just maybe two terrible accidents in a row.
Wow, that's amazing. All right, we do have to touch on some other reality shows here. I don't watch The Bachelor, but I see on Twitter that there was some controversy with that show earlier this week. What was that about?
So The Bachelorette comes on this summer, and the way The Bachelor works and The Bachelorette works now is they basically take someone from the season that's just ending, who everyone loved, but who got rejected, and then that person becomes the star of the next season. So they didn't really have an obvious candidate for the summer version of The Bachelorette, but they're going to basically start off with two women, and then they're going to let the men who are there on The Bachelorette choose which woman, and I think the direct quote from the host was something like, which woman would be the better wife? So that sort of like raised a lot of sexism alarm bells from people who I think already find that show to be a little bit problematic. And it's something The Bachelorette has never done before, but it's actually something The Bachelor has done in the past. So it's not without precedent. And really, it's a way to try to juice up ratings because both of these shows are slipping over time. And I think, you know, the sort of soap opera appeal of it is just seeming like it's just like the same thing over and over again, so they have to try something new.
Have any of these couples actually gone on to a happily married life?
A few, but it's very, you know, like, it's basically a waiting game after they are on TV to see how quickly they will sell their story to a tabloid about their breakup. So, you know, a couple, but not many.
All right, and I have to talk about The Amazing Race. Ian's a big fan of it. My wife and I watch it all the time. And this season, they tried something interesting. Speaking of bachelors and bachelorettes, half of the teams that went off around the world with Phil Kogan and the amazing production team had never met before. They set these people up as blind dates. Usually, it's people who have a pre-existing relationship. Either they're married or dating or brother and sister or sorority sisters or they work together or something like that. This year, they put single people on there and randomly teamed them up. Not randomly, they cast it this way to put people together and said, okay, now you two are together as a team. You're going to go around the world. Interestingly, those teams who did not have the pre-existing condition seem to be doing better than the others.
Yeah, that's what I find most interesting about this. You know, at first it's kind of like the whole point of The Amazing Race at the first beginning was like that it changed the game by casting pairs of people, like you said, who had relationships. So to completely abandon that seemed like it was changing directions. But it does really get interesting in terms of like, is it more possible for strangers to succeed than it is for people who know each other, love each other, have family relationships? But I'm curious what you guys think about the twist and about how they're basically trying to shove the sort of dating relationship thing down our throats every time. It's like, are you falling in love now? Like, you know, we just ran from like Los Angeles to Japan. Like, we're not really thinking about whether or not we're dating yet.
Yeah, I thought it was an element that wasn't needed to be added. Like some of the rewards, like a dinner,
a date night.
Yeah, that just I don't need to see that during the race.
But I did hear one interesting theory about this, and that is, the couples that have a pre-existing condition every couple that's been together for any amount of time, you have a groove with each other where you can even argue with each other and fight with each other, you know, about directions or whatever it is, without hurting the relationship. You still love each other, but that happens to everybody. But the people who didn't know each other before, they're actually being really nice to each other, excessively nice in some cases, because A, they know they're on TV, and B, when you go out on a blind date, you're not rude to that person and arguing with that person on the blind date.
Right, exactly, yeah. And so they're really treating each other well, which I'm going to be really curious, maybe more than anything else, if that fades over time, like if by episode 6, 7, 8, 9, they're starting to fight, or if it's worse, or if they're maybe even more functional than they are right now.
Yeah. Oh, you two are so cute together. A week later, you shouldn't talk to her anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you think of a show doing something like this as an obvious attempt to kind of revitalize the show? And I guess the second part of the question has to be, how are the ratings for The Amazing Race now that it's been on Friday nights?
The ratings on Friday nights have been pretty terrible, which is why I think they did this, because it moved last fall. So this is, you know, an attempt. I don't think it's really improved the ratings all that much, which is unfortunate. You know, I've been a long fan of the show, and I really wish that it would make some other changes. Like, a lot of the stuff that I used to love about it, like the fact that they would have to choose their own methods of transportation, that all has gone away, and now it's just kind of like, go here, take this flight, do these tasks, and it's much more of a sort of an obstacle course than a choose your own adventure kind of thing than it used to be. So I'd love to, but I know that that's, you know, budget cuts, and just over the years it gets a little bit harder to produce, especially with the ratings that it's getting.
It's still
I'm always glad for a show to try something new and just see if it works.
It's still a remarkably well-produced show, and to just flash back to Survivor for a second, that still has some of the best nature photography on commercial primetime television. It just fascinates me to watch these year in and year out. By the way, my wife just texted me to say, we have a pre-existing relationship, not a pre-existing condition.
Yes.
maybe the same difference.
Maybe. Andy Daynard, you can read him on his website, realityblurred.com. Have a great weekend, Andy. Thanks,
Paul. You too.